Experts say that being yourself and risking people not liking you is better than experiencing the stress and tension that results from bending over backwards to please others. This is Cherie, your host for Life of a People Pleaser podcast. Stay tuned.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for joining me for Life of a People Pleaser podcast. Today, we are talking to SB Wayne Jackson. What to do, Wayne?
What's going on?
So first, I want to know what your thoughts are on your friend here starting her own podcast and what the name of it, how it relates to me. Do you think I'm a people pleaser?
Yeah, I actually think you're a people pleaser. You know, try your best to please those that you deal with. So it's a great title. Fits.
Do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing?
Yeah, it could be a good or bad thing, you know, depending on how you look at things. You know, pleasing people is not a bad thing, always a bad thing, you know.
Okay, so I wanted to interview you today because there's a lot of layers to your life, okay? So I've known you, say, 13, 14 years, and there's Wayne Jackson who grew up living life in the streets. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
So early age, young, growing up, practically fatherless, in a fatherless household, you know, mother always working type of deal. It's a classic story.
Right. Young black man in America.
Yeah. Grew up in East Sacramento, you know, and just looked towards the outside, basically, to, you know, fulfill whatever I felt like needed to be filled in or whatever I needed to be missing and things like that.
So what was most appealing? Money, family and friend bond, having people have your back?
It was the actual feeling. Because whether I was with somebody or by myself, you know, just walking around, having that label and title and people that knew that, you know.
Didn't mess with you?
I mean, yeah, sense of power type thing. And, you know, growing up where most of the money had to come in with through a single mother, you know what I mean? So all the money was accounted for.
Right.
Didn't really get to have, you know, a lot of things or, you know, never really seen the Jordans or the Nikes or things like that. So I learned how to be like self-sufficient early, and the only way to do that, especially back in those days, was to have type of money or some type of some respect or things like that, you know. So I fell into that.
And then you became a father.
Yeah.
What do you think changed once you became a dad?
Early age fatherhood was kind of the ending of it. It was different. So when I became a dad, it was kind of like, oh man, you know, I got another part of me that I don't want to experience what I went through. Mm-hmm. But of course, that's everybody's, you know, until you kind of jump into parenthood and then you realize that your story is your own story. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, and then you kind of have this child that's looking up to you and you got to be a role model too. And maybe it isn't exactly what you want for him, right?
Not necessarily. That's not the lifestyle I would rather have for my child. I feel like I was pushed into a lifestyle because I felt like maybe I was neglected in a few areas. So, you know, I wanted to make sure that that wasn't a problem or an issue when it came to my child, you know.
And at what point did you start a rap career?
Oh, wow. I would say in the 90s. I have to say, I think it was like 89. So it was a while ago.
Like a youngster still, high school, junior high, what age?
Junior high school. I was... just, you know, into, I was somebody that used to sing along with the radio. So I was mostly interested in singing at first, kind of, because, you know, I used to sing in a choir and things like that. Music background was really big, so I just started singing, and then I started writing, and I was like, oh, and then I started listening to early influences, such as was Too Short, MC Hammer, you know, things like that, Heavy D, those of that nature. And just decided, like, oh, I could match that with, you know, people knowing me and things like that. So I was kind of infatuated with that lifestyle. So I started young, really young.
Yeah, and then you became out on the scene, meaning you were between Sac to the Bay Area doing shows with people with some big names in this area, right?
Yeah.
And how many albums to date do you have out?
Amazon, Spotify, probably there's about six of them out. And then, as you know, with a lot of artists out there, you know, undocumented albums is just almost countless, or just songs, you could say, but there's about six of them out on platforms such as Amazon, Apple Music, Spotify, singles, things like that.
And I know firsthand, like, you literally just need to hear a beat, and you have nothing pre-scripted. It's off the top of your head. You can rap about a piece of bubble gum all the way to growing up in the hood. And it doesn't take any time to sit there and, you know, get that off your noggin at all. You're pretty talented in that. It takes nothing for you to spit rhymes on experiences and out of nowhere.
I just kind of base it, when you base it on your real life or experience or whatever, it's kind of easy to tell that story. And before I write, you know, I always think about what exactly can I relate to the beat or the song, and it just kind of comes out. There's a lot of songs where you might hear a lot of sayings over and over again, because I do have like key lines and things like that. Mm-hmm. But it's because I'm really stressing that or emphasizing that point, because it's a real story. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you have a repeat of events and, you know, things like that. But I try to keep it, you know, just a mix of things. It's a little different now that I'm older. My songs are, you know, but I just kind of mix it up for people that love that type of music.
Have you ever written a love ballad?
The breakup. And I don't know if that's really considered a love ballad, but it was about a story, you know, a past relationship that I had, 16-year relationship that kind of went bad on me. And, you know, I kind of opened up and talked about it. It's ready to go, so, you know, I'm thinking about pushing it this summer and letting people hear that pain, you know, that type of pain.
That's part of healing for you, and I've heard that song, and I think it's fire. I think that people will relate to it. Right. I do want to use that as a curtail to talk about the fact that you were in such a lengthy, long relationship, and now you've spent the last 3 years discovering who you are and learning how to adult on your own and be independent on your own. What do you think is the biggest thing that you've learned about yourself in the last 3 years?
Oh, basically what I've learned is that if I apply myself, I can do it. There is no pushback, you know. I mean, you know, when you're with somebody for so long and you guys are piggybacking off of each other, depending on each other, you know, not to say that's a bad thing, but, you know, my thoughts on that is, you know, I feel like if that's a situation or if that's a relationship, it needs to go forward, you know.
Right.
And, like, it's okay to do that, but, you know, just to have that type of situation and you don't go forward with it, it's kind of like a hindrance on both sides, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
Lesson learned. You know, I feel like if I would ever get in that type of relationship again and make those decisions to, you know, have everything or come together, then it's definitely worth more than just a boyfriend-girlfriend situation, maybe more than a second look type of thing. So, you know, just lesson learned.
I don't know what's going on and what type of shit you're on, but I'm tired of this relationship and I'm done.
Started from a simple kiss, then to I miss you, every day I love you. You made the whole life change. Even though I cheated, I always thinking of you. Never thinking of me, no. You would never do it, even know that you say you did. You was the first one to jump gun, draw back and shoot and leave a motherfucking plan dead. It was all in my head, bang, bang. You became left all them bloodstains. A broken arrow shot in my chest is all that's left at the motherfucking crime scene. Yeah, that was a damn deal, yeah. Never had a chance, cause all you do is buy apples. Stuck on what's not real, so I guess everything's not actual and factual. We don't even need to talk. 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 Nah. We don't even need to talk. We don't even need to talk. We don't even need to talk.
Yeah.
We don't even need to talk. We don't even need to talk. We don't even need to talk.
Do you see yourself married one day?
Yeah, I definitely do. Like, ultimately, you know, I feel like I'm a family man. I like to do all the things. I do see myself like on camping trips and woods. You know, I have children now, 10-year-old child, you know, 21-year-old son.
For the listening audience, you have two sons.
Two sons.
I did mention the older one earlier because you had him at such a young age.
Yeah.
And your 10-year-old, oh my God, loves to play piano, great swimmer, great snowboarder.
Yeah.
Has the availability to experience life in a way most kids in this area do not.
Yeah.
So he is definitely already growing up different than the journey that you were on.
Right. And I'm going back to earlier we were talking about, you know, I wanted to give him a better opportunity than I had, you know, just to see things differently. When I had my son and we were actively living in Sacramento, you know, it was a closed atmosphere, you know, school back home, don't go outside, stranger danger type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's able to open up his mind, open up in his environment, be able to enjoy the outdoors and things like that. And so he's appreciating life that way. So he's going to be a, you know, young, responsible grown man.
Yeah, different exposures or different outcomes.
Yeah.
You just want what's best for him. So.
Right.
And you're a grandfather.
Yeah.
You're a papa.
Papa Jackson.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, man.
Is that a different feeling?
Yeah, you know, well, you know, I can't lie, you know, because my son, my oldest being 21, still my young one, him having a baby at such an early age, at first it kind of just felt like I had the baby, to be honest with you.
Well, do you think it was a repeated cycle then? Do you wish he had waited later, or were you just like, I mean, he's an adult now, he's doing his own thing, and I'm going to support what that is?
I mean, yeah, you know, his blessing is his blessing.
Right.
You know, I definitely look at it like that, and I support him. You know, you can only want the best for your child, whether the decision they make was best for them or if it's not best for them. So
right.
I support his decision, and you know, and life is going to teach a valuable lesson, whether it's going to be hard or easy.
Mm-hmm.
So in that aspect, you look at it like that, I think it's going to be a lesson learned, you know, maybe a valid lesson.
Yeah.
Good lesson. And then, you know, I mean, but at the end of the day, we got a nice, healthy grandbaby here, and you know, he's active.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talking about life, there's something about you that is relevant to my story, and that is health issues, right? And I'm specifically talking about diabetes and the process and journey to losing weight to sustain a lifestyle of healthiness, right? So what was it that day that put you into a hospital where your entire world changed?
Oh, okay. Well, you know,
he wasn't taking care of you.
Yeah, definitely wasn't taking care of me. But I, at the same time...
Or did you not know? Or
yeah, I actually, it was funny, I was actually on my way to Hawaii. You know, really excited. First time to Hawaii. Lifetime accomplishment. I was going to spend 2 weeks there. Anybody knows you've been to Hawaii, 2 weeks there is major.
Right.
Especially if you're from the States. It's a lot of money.
Yeah, for sure.
But... you know, and I was taking my youngest, well, my oldest at the time, my youngest out there, and my best friend, which I call my brother.
Mm-hmm.
We were headed out to Hawaii and just, you know, to relax. We actually we were going to go see Dog the Bounty Hunter.
Oh, awesome.
Being taped. It was crazy. My son loves him, so whatever. And on the way to Hawaii, you know, I didn't live the best lifestyle beforehand. I was active. I've always been active. High school, growing up, I was an athlete. So, you know, I just started, like, having this sensation of having to go to the bathroom every 3 minutes. I was, like, kind of tripping out, like, what's going on?
Something's not right.
Something is not right. And then, you know, and having to use the bathroom on an airplane every 3 minutes.
Oh,
from
that's
Sacramento
terrible.
To Hawaii is terrible.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, first there's a line.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'm holding
it. You got to squeeze through the chairs to get out of them to the row. The,
and then you got to squeeze in that little room. And then, you know, then I'm walking out. Then by the time I get to my seat, I got to use the bathroom again. I'm like, what's going on here, you know? And I'm thinking that I'm not dehydrated, so I'm drinking water, which is causing me to use the bathroom more, right?
Right.
So I get to Hawaii, you know, it's very humid out in Hawaii, for those who don't know. Hawaii is just very humid. Well, that day, and I got off the airplane. I remember I was walking with my brother and my son, and then, before I knew it, I was in the hospital.
In Hawaii.
I was in Hawaii, right off the airplane, first day of my trip. You know,
collapse? You just said, I need to go get checked. I'm not really sure what's happening to me.
I kind of just walked off. It was one of those I don't know if I was going into a diabetic shock.
Okay, yeah.
I think my sugars were reaching at about 500 to 600 when I was took to the hospital. I kind of just walked off in a daze. I do remember the beach was on the right-hand side. The sun was really bright. And my brother was following me with my child, yelling my name. I really didn't hear him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then he called my mom. And then from there, they were about 30 minutes away on the other side of the island. They were already there. They've been there already 2 weeks.
Oh, okay.
And they pulled up on us and drove me straight to the hospital. And they was like, hey, yo, you're diabetic. I was like, diabetic? Yeah, I was like, oh, yo. And I came to Hawaii to eat pineapples. You know what I'm saying? So, no pineapples.
No. Yeah, it's definitely a life-changing diagnosis.
Yeah.
And if you're not serious about what they tell you about how to get your health back in order, it just cycles into further issues, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Organ failure, feet damage, blindness, all that stuff. Excessive weight gain and all that. So that's definitely an eye-opener. You wanted to be around for your sons.
Yeah.
You wanted to be around for moms and pops and sis. And here you are in a hospital being told that you have something you weren't aware you had, and it was now time to change who you are.
Right.
And that took years, right?
Oh, man.
It takes years for most of us, trust me.
Yeah, because it's a shocker, but it's a silent killer. So at the same time, you just go ahead and continue to do what you're doing, and you don't really feel anything.
It's so hard, the education piece, to learn what is okay and what's not okay, and to change everything about you so that you stay under a certain level so that you're not creating more further damage to yourself, right?
Right. It's hard. You got to test yourself, poke, be on medication,
go to nutrition classes, see a doctor all the time.
Yeah. And a lot of people that have this disease don't have health care, so they're dealing with it on just the aspect. So, I just want to kind of give advice for if you don't have health care and you have to deal with diabetes, just, change your diet. Drink a lot of water, change your diet, count.
Exercise. You need to exercise. Walk alone will drop your sugar.
Yeah, look at count.
But you're right. I didn't even think about the aspect of, first of all, the test strips, the poke needles, all that stuff is so expensive.
So
and then you want, if someone has to have medication on top of that, I mean, there's pharmaceutical companies that give discounts, but it's extremely expensive for people that are not insured.
Correct. Yeah.
So you're right. It can't, this is especially type 2 diabetes, is something that can be reversed by diet and exercise.
Yeah.
So you definitely have to be more habitual about your patterns and your, routines and stuff like that. So
definitely, and if y'all want to just reach out, go do your research, go online, www.diabetes.com or whatever you got to do, or just look it up and do your research. There's a lot of information out there, a lot of good, things to read. And but the main thing is just gotta watch it, make sure you test and just make sure you if you feel like you're alone or you feel like it's something that you're unable to do, go ahead and just contact, maybe your local health official or whatever. Just kind of get that information because it's a silent killer.
For sure. So talking about one medical related thing, I want you to explain how you got into the mental health arena. I mean, you work for a mental health organization, a very well-known psych facility in our area.
Yeah.
And what was your entry-level position going into this? What even had you apply, and what was your interest? And then now, where are you at with that? And what does that look like for you for your life now? Is this a job that's now become a career?
Yeah. It started when I was younger. I was kind of looking for a better job. I was working at the Sacramento Six Drive-In Theaters, and I was like, man, I need to get paid a little bit more. So I actually knew somebody that I went to that owned a facility that took care of adults with disabilities and things like that. So I got into it that way, and I just took an interest. And actually, these adults, there were like 6 males in the house, and we used to go there and take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of them being, patients or clients, they actually became friends.
Yeah.
Whether or not, they had the ability to communicate correctly, or, a lot of them had autism or different type of
disabilities. Yeah.
And so I'm like, wow, I'm able to, it doesn't matter the level of friendship or who you can befriend. It doesn't change. You know what I'm saying? So, or it doesn't really there's no boundaries to who you can become a friend to or who you can like or who likes you. And so from that point, I just kind of took a more higher interest in it, and I'm just like, man, it's more than just a job to me at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm meeting people. I like the job. I don't feel confined to an office. There's nothing really wrong with that, but I just felt like, you know, I'm a more type of worker that likes to move around the field, you know, talk and act goofy or whatever I need to do to brighten up somebody's day. I'm a people person at work, really. And I can relate, you know, so I bring the relation to my job. Currently, you know, working with mental health is a little different than DD adults and things like that. So what really gets it for me is, you know, I bring that piece of reality to work. I don't leave out the fact that anybody is any step away from that situation.
Mm.
And when I come and deal with the people,
even
myself, right? And I let my friends, I'm gonna call them my friends, their patients and clients. I let them know that. You know, I let them know that the reality is reality. You know, I'm not here to police them, or I'm not here to, you know, be somebody that directs them. Well, direct them in a you know, positive manner. But I'm just here as somebody to talk to, lean on, get advice, help.
Right.
And you just never know, like, you know.
And you're just a facility for males and females.
Yeah, we definitely a co-ed facility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they come to us needing help.
Yeah.
And by the time, you know, the gratification is by the time they leave our facility, they receive that help.
Yeah.
So we're able to release them back into the public knowing that they've gotten that much more better before they came to the facility. So.
Have you ever been afraid of a client without specifically saying anything that violates why they're there? Have you ever been yourself personally afraid of a client?
Coming into a certain situation, I don't think I've been afraid, but I
leery, hesitant, cautious.
No, you know, I think that I go into this facility, like, I think I was, it's kind of weird to say, I think I was chose for this field.
Mm.
I think I go in with a sword and the shield, you know, I pray up, and I think it's just automatic. I think I've gone into a situation, though, not afraid, but weary of the physical altercation that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who and how and what and when, who's going to get hurt out of this situation? Is it going to be a coworker? Is it going to be myself? Is it going to be the patient?
Yeah, themselves too, yeah.
Yeah, more so than actually being scared. I do try to avoid confrontation when I'm there because I don't want to be confrontational because, you know, I'm there to help the people. But
they're already hyped up. You don't need to have the situation be even more volatile, right?
Yeah, and I do, you know, off the record, I say some inappropriate things, so, you know, but I can explain. You know, there's a taste of reality and there's a taste of disreality. So, you know, I go in there, I joke with them and I say some things. And so they appreciate me. They love me. And mm-hmm. So it makes my job much more easier, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So being in that field when you're in the dating scene and coming across women that maybe are, you know, you're getting to know somebody. Are you analyzing somebody? Are you using your work experience to decide if this is a good one or not?
You know,
is it hard to turn off is what I'm saying, like, seriously?
Yeah, I mean, working in the mental health field for so long, you kind of become this psych doctor without even thinking about it.
Right.
Like Dr. Frankenstein for some reason or something. But, it's kind of like... It's kind of like in general conversation. I mean, it's a side eye thing, you know. It's kind of like a warning sign, not warning sign.
Right.
But I try. You know what? I try to apply. I try to apply what I use at work in my daily living. You know, everything is based off of reality, my reality or their reality or just the current reality.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know how to differ the two, and I just basically, you know, like I said, when it comes to mental health, everybody is just one step away from that. And so I do understand, and I normally come to a dating situation open-minded, you know what I mean?
Isn't it crazy, like, in the last 20 years, how much more prevalent and open people are about maybe their incapacities, right?
Yeah.
It's like growing up, you didn't know a lot of people that had depression or anxiety or... you know, other mental health related issues, and now it's like okay. I mean, we've made it kind of in society something that's, it's okay to acknowledge, accept, talk about, get help for, and almost everybody has it from some residual issues from whatever, right? Yeah. Experiences, upbringing, trauma and relationships, whatever. A lot of people come to the table.
Yeah, you know, I noticed it more.
Men and women alike, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh well, statistics do state that, you know, in the United States alone, young girls and women are the highest rates of suicide.
Why do you think? What is the number one issue?
You know, it's just dealing with self, you know, okay. And that's basically what
for some reason I was thinking like some sort of sexual trauma.
You know what?
So I'd be interested to know those numbers.
It's surprising that it's not as much. Numbers have shown when it comes to that in the mental health that it has been an issue, but not as much lately, you know, as it was in the past. But it usually showing that, you know, young girls, you know, it kind of skips over teenage girls. It goes from like young girls to older women, and then ranging from mid-aged men having suicide with weapons, you know, such things as guns, you know, being that the highest suicidal rate is American Indians.
Really?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That makes me sad.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know.
Do you think some of it comes from substance abuse?
You know.
That changes the psyche?
You would be surprised what the mental health field is now, like at least 60% of drug usage or synthetic maybe drugs that bring on a psychiatric effect, you know.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot of mental health patients that's dealing with drug issues, and I would say about 30% of them that come into the facility, we can take care of their mental issues with just kind of sobering them up,
yeah,
getting them off of drugs and kind of giving them that real sense of reality and getting them in AA, using their outsourced resources for things, you know, to help them through the community.
Yeah, it's sad. It's sad in my own personal experience and my family to reflect on maybe drug usage turn into mental health problem or mental health problem turned into excessive drug usage. Right. You can go either way, right?
Either way. Either way, you know, and sad to say that, you know, the number one drug of America is the biggest cause of it, which is alcohol.
Wow.
Alcohol is the number one drug, and one of the main things that, you know, can drive people into this state of depression or feeling like they're not worthy of themselves or, you know, just kind of putting somebody in their own mind. And, you know, they kind of figure out from there they need help or things like that, you know, so.
Wow, that hit home. Thank you. I wouldn't even have thought that. I know we have a huge meth epidemic out here. You don't hear much about crack anymore, but, you know, meth is a huge problem in our area.
Oh, man.
And, like, fentanyl laced, you know what I mean? Stuff like that, like prescription drugs that are laced up are definitely just taking out people in numbers, and it's really, really, really sad.
Yeah, if you look at it, just think about it. Like, what is the one additive thing that they say don't take any prescription drugs with?
Yeah. So. Yeah.
If they say we're giving you this prescription for
don't drink while you're taking
it. Yeah. Don't drink alcohol.
So yeah.
That's the base, you know. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people use that to cross, you know, the feeling.
So what's going on in the life of Wayne in this day and age? What do you got going on right now? Are you working on new projects? Are you still working on Wayne? What do you have going on?
Right now, I got a few things going. Like, I'm also working on another podcast, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
For fuck's sakes.
Thank you for the mentorship and help on that.
Yeah, doing a little bit of editing on that. And I'm working with the singer right now that I did a couple of projects with. I have a video coming up here in June.
Okay.
I'm just kind of moving all the way around here, you know, just kind of getting the work aspect down and just kind of figuring out what direction I'm going into.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right now as far as the music, or I'm not as active as I used to be in the past, but I do have some things coming out, and I do have some things, projects that I'm helping people with, you know. So, you know.
So are you on YouTube now?
Yeah, you could, yeah.
Okay, can you give everybody your handles? Like, is it S.B. Like, can you tell me? Because I don't know. Like, what's the handles people can find you on?
So it's funny because, you know, me and social media, we're buddies, but we're not, you know, sense. So,
but you do realize there's a need to spread your projects out there. You're going to have to be on social media in some capacity.
Yeah, so I do want to, yeah, that's one thing I do want to touch on. You know, me myself, I feel like when I was doing the music thing, I was putting myself out there, doing a lot of shows. I've done a lot of, you know, albums with our local artists or even artists that are on the mainstream. And I could honestly say nowadays, these days and age, you definitely have to push a hard line on the internet, which is something that, you know, I honestly could say I wasn't as willing to do. You know?
Right.
But there's a lot of artists out there that are very successful on pushing their stuff on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely use these different platforms. I'm old school, so, you know, when somebody asks me, like, for a tag or something, I'd be like, yeah, you can reach me on waynesworld.com, baby. I get my Gmail out, you know what I'm saying? So, but, yeah, SBCDub, just go ahead and type that into YouTube. SB My Addiction, I got videos out on there.
Apple, Spotify, right?
Apple, Spotify, you can go on Spotify, just put SBCDub, I got a whole list on there. Or you can actually go to SB's playlist, SB Radio, Spotify, Apple.
Who's somebody that people in this area would know that you've worked with that is the most infamous person you've ever had to mash up with?
Okay, so I would definitely say as a spark to my music career, because I've been doing music for a long time. So a few years back, a spark to my music career is when I was able to get into studio with C-Dub and DeJacka. So when I did that, it was like maybe, I believe, like about 6 months before he had passed.
Oh, okay.
And we had released a song. It's called Beastin'. It's on the My Business One project, and also on the Hitting Out the Classics, Cooking Up the Classics, I'm sorry, my CD. But we put that song out, and that, you know, the Jack is well loved through Northern California.
Yeah.
So. That caught wind, and they're like, C-Dub went first. You know, C-Dub has a name for herself. The Jacka was second. So they're like, oh, yeah, the Jacka. And then they're like, who's this third dude? And that's kind of what sparked it out for me because, you know, I got a lot of attention from the Bay Area. I started, like, the emails started rolling in. People wanted to work with me.
Mm-hmm.
Checks were coming in from CD Baby on the single.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Jacka Pass, RIP. And from there, you know, like to every artist, you know, while they're here, they do well. But, you know, when they pass and they have a big
phone,
they do a lot better. So, at the time, I think I was in a 360 deal, or you know, I had publishing through a certain company that really didn't check in with their artist, so they kind of like took that song off the album as a single and blocked it from us.
Oh man!
It got like at least I don't know how many hits. I believe a million, two days or something like that, and we kind of were cut out of that, you know, deal. But it's kind of like, you know, I don't know how that went at the end of the day. You know, we got a little bit from it, but from there, like the fame, you know, as far as people knowing who my name was and things like that, it just went upwards. And
yeah.
I worked with a lot of artists from there, you know.
Who's one rapper that would you love to work with that's in our area?
Oh, man, that's in our area?
California coast, I'm talking about.
Oh,
anywhere
California.
Up and down California.
Oh, just in California alone.
Yeah.
Oh, I would love to work with... I would say Sugar Free. I love him.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, I think that we'd be able to put together something nice. I like a lot of the way, you know, he comes across.
Yeah.
And I've dealt with a couple, and I've rapped with a couple of artists from LA area. So.
Okay.
Something like Sugar Free, I believe, and Be Legit, of course.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had an opportunity to come out with a song with Mozzie, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
We had,
he's made it pretty big now, huh?
Yeah, we get pretty big, and couple of local artists. I've worked with MCA and Spice One.
The Wise Men.
Yeah, the Wise Men or local Big Man. I got Hollow Tip, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I work with a lot of local artists, you know. So
everybody's trying that grind, right?
Yeah, yeah. Whether it's in the front or the background, you know, there's a lot of people I could contribute to my success locally.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, if I can, you know, do a song with everybody in my city, I definitely would, because, you know.
Big collaboration project, huh?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, you know, like, just with everybody, it's, you know, that's going to take some effort and some time.
So, right.
You know.
Yeah.
By the time that happens, hopefully my son will be on that project.
The little one or the older one?
The little one.
Because doesn't the older one yeah, didn't he dabble a little bit in music?
He has a video out. I produced some music for him. He's really talented, you know. He's just young, so he's exploring his options right now. He's doing MMA fighting,
mm-hmm.
you know, so he's training for that right now.
Gotcha.
And so, you know, he's trying to
dip. Maybe he'll circle back around.
Yeah, you know, I think my youngest, though, picked up more of an ear for music. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think he's going to be the one that
carries you,
sings, and
carries
writes
on your legacy.
Yeah, writes and sings and does all that, you know, because he's just an actor in itself. So
mm-hmm.
my older son's going to be the tough guy. You know, he wants the belt. You know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So,
well, I just wanted to wrap it up. Thank you for taking time to talk to me on my new podcast, to continue to mentor me on my group podcast, and just wanted to give you a little bit of exposure and say thank you.
Yeah.
Anything you want to ask me or talk to me about before I end this?
I just want to, you know, wish you luck on your endeavors and everything you're doing, you know, and successfully putting together a successful podcast and letting the people hear how you feel and your subjects and everything you do. And, you know, just go and give it a listen and give it a try and, you know, keep doing what you're doing.
Yes. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Until next time, much love.
Find new episodes here each week. Make sure to subscribe, like, follow, and share. And remember, take care of you before anyone else. All love.
Love. Love.
Thank you for tuning in. What a great episode. Find new episodes here each week. Make sure to subscribe, like, follow, and share. And remember, take care of you before anyone else. All love.
Love. Love.
Thank you for tuning in. What a great episode.